The overall theme of the conference is transmitting values, and one of the things that we need to do to transmit values is to know those values. You can't transmit something unless you know it. And one of the values is understanding and appreciating the rhythm of the Jewish calendar. And it just so happens that today is an extremely important day in the Jewish calendar that regretfully has been totally overlooked. We've totally forgotten about this day. This day is centrally important. Could you ask them, Susie, if they could either stop talking or stop?
Yes.
I'm not sure what they have going on. Therefore, I thought that because we're meeting today, I should remind you a little bit about what today is all about and why today is significant, actually extraordinarily significant. Today used to be a fast day in many different communities. Today is the 20th day of Sivan. And the 20th day of Sivan is massively significant. Regretfully, we don't know anything about, most people don't know anything about the 20th day of Sivan. So I thought on the 20th day of Sivan, what better focus to analyze for the issue, the overall issue of transmitting values, is to determine those values, to determine the significance of the days that we recognize and observe and live in, and then to maybe go from there. So I want to begin in the 12th century in France. In the 12th century. So in the year, in the year 1171, in the spring of the year 1171, a Jew by the name of Isaac, the son of Elazar, was walking in the town of Blois in France, B-L-O-I-S. You have a map here in front of you. You see where Paris is. It's on the upper right-hand side. There's a circle around Paris. It's to the right of the split, a little bit up. There's a circle, there's Paris. South, west of Paris is Orléans. And to the west of Orléans is Blois. These were major cities of Jewish inhabitants during this time in the 12th century in France. In Blois, there is a river called the Loire River. L-O-I-R-E River, which actually runs from Orléans all the way down through Blois. You could go there today. It's a very famous and well-trodden day trip from Paris because there are many chateaus, many castles along the Loire Valley. The Loire Valley was caused by the Loire River, L-O-I-R-E. The Jews walking along the side of the river, and it's dusk, it's getting dark, and he's carrying some, you're picturing,
yeah.
Okay. He's carrying some skins that he had just recently bought. And the skins were white. And it's dusk. Coming towards him is a Christian servant on a horse. The Christian servant can't quite make out what is walking towards him because it's getting dark. All he sees is whiteness coming towards him. The horse gets frightened and throws the servant off the horse. The servant then immediately goes to his master and tells his master in the spring before Pesach of 1171 that by the banks of the Loire River, he just saw a Jew disposing of the corpse of a Christian child. He just saw a Jew take a Christian baby and throw the Christian baby into the water. One thing led to another. The Jews obviously denied it. The Jews obviously said, prove it. They couldn't prove it. This is not the first time this accusation was leveled against the Jews. The first time this accusation was leveled against the Jews, what's this called? Jews are killing Christian babies in order the blood libel or the ritual murder accusation. The first one was in England in 1146, where they actually found a dead Christian baby in a Jewish house. Clearly, they planted the baby in the house and then they knocked on the door and they accused the Jews of killing the baby. The second one was in Gloucester, which is not spelled Gloucester, G-L-O-C-E-S, Gloucester. pronounced Gloucester, the same thing in Massachusetts, town of Gloucester in England. Second ritual murder accusation. Once again, there was a baby that was produced in evidence. This, in 1171, is the first time that this accusation has been leveled against Jews in continental Europe, but now moved from England to France, and there is no baby. There is no evidence whatsoever. Nevertheless, based on whatever was going on in Blois at that time, one thing led to another. The Jews were imprisoned. The Jews tried to bribe their way out, as they always did in the Middle Ages when they were in trouble. It almost worked. A priest came to town and fomented opposition to the Jews. At the end, today is the Yahrzeit, on Chaf Sivan in 1171, either 31 or 33 Jews were burnt at the stake in Blois as a punishment for this horrific crime that was never proven. We don't know whether it's 31 or 33 because the Aleph and the Gimel in the manuscript is a little fuzzy, so we don't know if it's an Aleph or a Gimel. 31 or 33 Jews were burnt today on Chaf Sivan in Blois in France in 1171. Says the chronicle, the description. We have two historical texts that tell this story. On the bottom right of the first page, Vayareach Hashem es Reach HaNichoach, we're here told the story. Vayareach Hashem es Reach HaNichoach, and you pick up the sacrificial imagery. This is not just killing, but we have a desire to try to frame Kiddush Hashem in a ritual way. We consider it to be like a korban. Vayareach Hashem es Reach HaNichoach berevi b'chodesh, on Wednesday. Be'esrim l'chodesh Sivan, today, on the 20th of Sivan, in the year 1171. V'ra'ui hu l'kov o'tzom l'chol b'nei amein. And this tragedy is so profound that it's appropriate that we should establish a fast day on this day for all of the Jewish people. And in fact, left-hand side, the second source that we have, from Ephraim of Bonn, who lived in Bonn in Germany about 50 years later, who wrote a Sefer Zechira, which is a collection of discussions of Jewish tragedy after the First Crusade. The First Crusade was in 1096 in mostly Germany and then further eastward, beginning with the Second Crusade in 1146. The Sefer Zechira covers a whole list of Jewish tragedies in the second half of the 12th century. There are four pages in there on what happened in Blois in 1171. And Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn tells us the following. Berevi b'Shabbos, here you have the translation at the bottom, on Wednesday, Esrim b'Sivan, today, the 20th of Sivan, Dalet Alofin, Tuf, Kluf, Lamed Aleph, equal 1171. In fact, Kibluhu, Kol Kihilos Tzorfas, V'iye Hayam V'Rainus. Tzorfas is what? Iye Hayam, the islands of the sea.
British Empire.
The Kaviyachal, the British Empire, England, Vechulu, Verinus, what is Rhinus? The Rhineland, which became Germany. So all the Kihilot, in France, England and its environs, and the Rhineland accepted this as a day of mourning and fasting. Meritzon Nafsham, on the basis of their own desire. Who, the mitzvah Hagaon Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Harav Rab Meir, who is Rabbeinu Yaakov Hagaon, Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Harav Rab Meir, you have it here in the English. This is Rabbeinu Tam, none other than Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is to pass away 4 months later. Rabbeinu Tam dies in 1171. Rabbeinu Tam is living in Orléans, right up the river. Rabbeinu Tam, this is the last communal pronouncement of Rabbeinu Tam, according to Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn, that the Jews fasted on this day because they themselves thought that it was appropriate. Ooh, b'mitzvah ha'gaon Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Rav Rav Meir asher kasav alehem svarim v'hodiyam. Rabbeinu Tam wrote them and informed them. ki ra'ui l'kovo tzom l'chol b'nei amenu, that it's kedai, it's appropriate for this to be a fast day for the entire Jewish people. V'godol yihyeh ha'tzom hazeh min tzom gedalia ben achikam, it's even greater than tzom gedalia, ki yom kippurim hu, it's mamash yom kippur. It's mamash yom kippur. So for whatever reason, and there are reasons why this particular tragedy is worthy of its own fast day, for whatever reason, and you need to sort of step back and look at the whole historical picture, I don't have time to do that, this day was established as a fast day, according to Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn, Sefer Zechira, by Rabbeinu Tam, none other than the great Rabbeinu Tam, one of the greatest Jews in the Middle Ages. And it was in fact observed, according to Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn, by the totality of the communities in France, England, and the Rhineland. Now we move to page 2. We fast forward to the 17th century. We fast forward now to the 17th century. In the 17th century, Jews are no longer living in France, England, and the Rhineland. Jews have been expelled. Beginning in England in 1290, first expulsion of the Jews from Western Europe, moving eastward from France throughout the 14th century, from the Rhineland throughout the 15th century. By the time we come to the 16th century, what we call Ashkenazi Jews, who were living in France, Germany, and England, have now basically moved mostly where are they living? They're living in Poland, Eastern Europe, in the area of Poland, centrally in Poland, and the areas around Poland. So we would say that Western Europe is now empty of Jews. Now the Jews who were formerly living in Western Europe are moving to Poland, they live in Poland. Just like the Sephardi Jews in southwestern Europe from the Iberian Peninsula, expelled in 1492 from Spain, 1497 from Portugal, also are moving eastward, and they're living in the Ottoman Empire. They're living around the Mediterranean. So the Sephardi Jews are living in the Ottoman Empire. The Ashkenazi Jews are living in Poland. We're now in the 17th century. There's a horrific massacre that takes place in the 17th century. In Hebrew, it's known as Gezerot Tach Vetat. Tuf Ches and Tuf Tes. Tuf Ches is 1648. Tuf Tes is 1649. They're known as the Khmelnytsky massacres. There was a Ukrainian nationalist by the name of Bogdan Khmelnytsky who wanted to wrest, W-R-E-S-T, independence from the Poles. The Jews were stuck in the middle. He destroys probably 300 Jewish communities. We don't know the exact number of Jews who were destroyed. Roughly 10,000. Roughly 10,000. An enormous amount of Jews who were killed. At least double, triple were displaced. And there is a major trauma to East European Jewry in the 17th century. It's now 1650, and there's a respite. There's a respite. What does the Jewish community that's left want to do? So the major job is to reconstruct. The major job is to pick up the pieces. If you're living in Krakow and you're living in Lublin and you somehow survived, you'll look around, it's a churban. So your first job is to try to recreate the little vestiges of whatever Jewish community is left and to try to give chizuk to those who survived. The second thing they wanted to do was to set aside a day to commemorate what happened. We want to remember what happened. How do Jews remember events? We fast. Our propensity is to fast. If we want to remember the Churban Beis HaMikdash, number one, and the Churban Beis HaMikdash, number two, what do? We fast. We want to remember the Hariga of Gedalia, we fast. We want to remember when the city was besieged of Yerushalayim, we fast. We fast in order to remember things. Pass this down, please. We fast in order to remember. And so, we want to set aside a day to fast. Now here we have a problem. Not unlike the problem that we have when it comes to the Shoah. If you you want to remember the Shoah, the way we remember is that we fast. So we don't have a fast day to commemorate the Shoah. We have a day called Yom HaShoah. Well, what day should it be? If we want to remember what happened in Blois in 1171, it's not a problem. Because, comma, sadly, comma, all the Jews, 31 or 33, were murdered on the same day, today. So obviously, it's today. It's Chaf Sivan. But in the case of the Shoah, or let's pedal backwards to 1648, 1649, the tragedy lasted for a year and a half. So what are you going to do? So they decided they were going to do a day of commemoration, i.e. fast, on the day that the tragedies began. You do it on the day of the Hatchala. Yesterday, there was no tragedy. Today, there's a tragedy. Which day you're going to choose for a year and a half? The day that emerges as the most significant is the day that it began. When did the Khmelnytsky massacres begin? Page 2. So you have a map on the top that gives us a sense of the magnitude of this set of massacres, of this tragedy. And we have the following. One of the chronicles, there are 6 chronicles that we have, historical chronicles from the Khmelnytsky massacres. The most famous is Yevain Mitzula, by Rav Nasana to Hanover, who himself was a survivor. He himself was somebody who survived. He was a victim, and he was able to survive. He writes that it began, the bottom right of page 2, Vayi b'yom dalet chav sivan, ba'o ha-kozak and samach u'ir nemara. It began on Wednesday, the 20th of Sivan. That's when the fury of Khmelnytsky and his hordes was unleashed against the Jews. It lasted for a year and a half. From the middle of 1648, Chav Sivan, June, it was June then also, in 1648, until the end of 1649. Now it's 1650, left side, about 70 pages in to the Sefer Yevein Mitzula, the Asulohem writes Rav Nosson of Hanover, the Asulohem Gaone Eretz Da'arba Arasot. This was known as the Council of the Four Lands, the general super communal organization in charge of Jewish life throughout the Polish area. It was known as Va'ad Arba Arasot. There were 4 major lands: Poland, Big Poland, Little Poland, Lithuania, 4 countries that made up the super communal organizations. So the Rabbanim, the leaders of this group in charge of trying to maintain Jewish life to the extent to which it was left in Poland in 1650. They made all kinds of enactments in order to ensure the perpetuation of Jewish life. V'tiknu tainis tzibur b'chol medinas Poland b'yom esrim b'chodesh Sivan. They established the fast day on the 20th of Sivan for the entire community of Poland. Lidorot. What does Lidorot mean?
Forever.
Not as a one-time commemoration, but it's locked in. Lidorot. Through 2016. They're establishing this for the communities of Poland through 2016. Why did they choose Chav Sivan? Bo Bayom Shenasu Harigos Nemirov Kayadua Hakol. That's when Nemirov began to be destroyed. That was the first city. Shehaitaki Yula Rishona Shemasru Atzmam Lahariga Kedushat Hashem. As I told you 50 pages earlier on the right hand side, this was the first. So now we have a double commemoration that we associate with today. Number one, 1171 in Blois, fast day today. Clearly, you understand very well that as the Jews moved eastward, this fast that was, according to Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn, established by Rabbeinu Tam, somehow fell out of the suitcase. When Jews came to Poland, they were not fasting on the 20th of Sivan. Haraya, in 1650, when they wanted to establish a day to commemorate what happened in Khmelnytsky, they established a fast day on Chavsivan, which means that until now, nobody is fasting. Now we're going to establish a fast day. One of the great leaders who lived at that time is somebody that we know from his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. His name was Reb Shabtan Cohen. He's known as the acronym of his name, Shin Chaf, is the Shach. So the Shach, Reb Shabtai Cohen, we know the Shach well from his commentary on Yeridea and other places. The Shach wrote poetry, liturgical poetry, to commemorate what happened. He published in 1650 a little slim volume, and in the introduction, in the Hakdama, he writes a little bit of the story about what happened. And I took four lines at the bottom of the page. The Shach says, why did we choose the 20th of Sivan for Chmelnytsky? Number one, because that's when it began. And number two, end of the second line, Ya'an, ki yom ze, third line, hu t'chilo l'gzeros u'machovos. That's the first reason that we saw in the Yevei Mitzulah, that's when it began. Vegam ki bo huchbalu hatzaros v'kilkulim ki gam gzeras 1171 hayta bo toy. So the Shach associates the Chaf Sivan of Chmelnytsky with the Chaf Sivan of Blois. So he knew about it. They didn't fast on it, but in the Machzor and Yom Kippur, and there's a lot of evidence, I wrote a whole article about this, in the Machzor and Yom Kippur that they used to have in Poland, in the Hasara Haruge Malchus part of the Musaf Chazaras Hashatz on Yom Kippur, where we mention the Hasara Haruge Malchus, right after the Hasara Haruge Malchus, there's a whole slicha about Blois. So they knew about Blois. They mentioned Blois every Yom Kippur. So they knew about it. And they knew it was on Chav Sivan, that a fast day was established. They just didn't keep it. So we have now a double significance of this day. So today, June, I don't know, 25th, whatever it is Chav Sivan, and we meet on Chav Sivan. So I thought it would be appropriate when we're thinking about Mesorah, when we're thinking about transmission of Mesorah, as the overall theme of this conference, for which we thank Susie Schwartz for all of her work and her other members of her committee. I thought that we should think about something that happened today when I realized, when I was asked for my title, I went to look at the day and I see Chav Sivan, and I said, well, I have a mitzvah to be mefarsim, a day that somehow just simply just fell off the consciousness of Erlich Yidin, of serious committed Jews. We never even heard that Chav Sivan means anything. Now we see that Chav Sivan means something actually quite substantially. Number one, because regretfully Nebuch, 31 to 33 Jews in Blois in 1171 on Chav Sivan, regretfully fast forward 500 years to 1650, today they set aside a fast day, Lidoros. Not a one-time ad hoc fast day, Lidoros, in order to commemorate what happened. And they chose today with a different calculus, not because it happened today like it did in Blois. It happened for a year and a half, but today is the day it began. And in fact, if you look at the top of page 3, there are two Magen Avrahams, there's a Taz that seriously undertook to fast on this day. It actually stuck. This time it stuck. The fast day of the 20th of Sivan in Eastern Europe remained operative among thousands of Jews until the Shoah. Until 1938, there were thousands, there were tens of thousands of Jews who were living in Poland and in Eastern Europe who fasted mamish on Yom Chav Sivan because for what happened in their earlier, in their community 300 years earlier in 1648. If you take a look, for example, there's a luach that all rabbis use and all gabbayim used, whether, you know, when you say tachlin, you don't say tachlin, what It's called the Ezras Torah Luach. It's like more important for rabbis than the Shulchan Aruch is for rabbis. It's a really nice. It's hanging on the wall. If you look in the Ezras Torah Luach for today, you will find that it says, Yesh Omrim Slichos V'yesh Noagim Lehisanos. There's special slichos that are said today on Chav Sivan. Their famous siddur is the Otzer HaTfilos siddur. It's a very traditional, famous, important siddur that was put out about 100 years ago. The back of the Otzer HaTfilos siddur Chelev Beis, there are about 10 pages, Slichos LeChav Sivan. And it was accepted. It got lost after the Holocaust. I know of one person who fasts on the 20th of Sivan. And I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Talk it up. Ask your friends. Do they know anybody who fasts? I know one person who fasted because he heard about it. An American kid, American guy, a little younger than me. He heard about it. He was taken by it. And he said, I need to maintain this tradition. Nobody's fasting. Nobody's fasting. I feel that I carry this tradition on my shoulder or in my digestive tract, and I am going to fast on this. I don't know anybody else who has it on the Masorah to fast on the 20th of Sivan. I want to conclude, because I have a minute and a half, with page 5. I mentioned before Yom HaShoah. Yom HaShoah was a day that was chosen by the Israeli Knesset as a day to commemorate the Holocaust. And as I mentioned to you methodologically, they faced at that time the same problem that the Jews in Poland faced in 1650. Namely, it lasted for 5 years. What day am I going to choose to commemorate the Holocaust? It lasted for 5 years. Why is this day more significant or more worthy to be the day singled out to remember the Holocaust than any other day? Nebuch Jews were killed all the time. I'm going to make a cheshbon to figure out more Jews were killed on this day than any other day. How can I do that? How do I know? So they struggled to come up with a particular day. But the whole notion, to step back for a moment, of establishing a day, the notion that you remember as a Jew by establishing a day to remember, whether or not you're going to fast on it, there's no fasting on Yom HaShoah, is based on our discussion. There is a collection of books in the library that's called Divrei Knesset. The Divrei Knesset is a compilation of all the speeches that were given in the Knesset. So it's something akin to what we in the United States have as the congressional record. But the congressional record for any day could be a half inch thick. It would take 6 months to read every word in the day's congressional record, because any congressman or any senator can insert into the congressional record any speech that they gave in their home district. The Divrei Knesset, by contrast, is only what's said in the Knesset. And I did a lot of research to try to understand how this Yom HaShoah unfolded. And I came across, on April 12th, this is the bottom of page 5, and with this I conclude, 1951, there's now a discussion for the first time about establishing something to commemorate the Holocaust. And there's a committee, and the committee is chaired by Mordechai Nurak. Mordechai Nurak was a member of the religious Zionists of Mizrahi, Miflagat Datit Leumit, the Mafdal party. He was a leader of the Mafdal party. Yosef Shprintzak, who's the speaker of the Knesset, invites him to chair the committee. He shows up on the Bama, on the rostrum of the Knesset, to deliver his speech on April 12, 1951. It's a gripping speech. He lost his wife and two children who were killed during the Shoah. He talks about it, he reflects on it. And in the middle of the speech, 3 pages, and this is the line that I want to conclude with, he says the following, Avotenu tiknu, the bottom of page 5, after all, we need to have a day because our ancestors established tiknulim ba'oraot shonim. They set aside for particular events yom tzom ve'eid, a day of fasting and commemoration, mourning, kamo chaf b'sivan va'ot, like chaf sivan. She'en lahashvotam b'shum panim ala tragedia ha'kadosh. If they established a fast day on Chaf Sivan for 31 or 33 Jews, it's a horrible thing. 33 Jews, 31 Jews, it's terrible. And if they established a Chaf Sivan in a late 1650 for 10,000 Jews, it's a horrible thing, 10,000 Jews. But it doesn't compare, says Rabbi Nurak, ala tragedia ha'kabira shel yameinu, 6 million Jews. So if you're going to establish a fast day for 31 Jews, you should establish something for 6 million Jews. And the point that I want to make is that the single, sole, solitary, historical precedent that was adduced in the conversation about the establishment of Yom HaShoah was Chaf Sivan. Kemo Chaf B'Sivan. So that this day has significant influence for us, because this day is the day that was used by those in the Knesset in favor of establishing Yom HaShoah. And that itself is a massive conversation. This day figures prominently in that conversation. So what do we have? And I stop. Today's a very important day. Today's an important day. We're sitting here with the orange juice and with the bagels and with the... And that's okay. Feel free. I mean, I don't want you to, oh my God, Baruch Hashem, he's sitting and eating and it's wonderful. And Tavo Aleichem Bracha, it's a great thing. As you're eating, at least just close your eyes and remember that once upon a time, it was a really sad time. It was a sad time. 1171 of Blois, 1650 Chmelnitsky, and used to establish Yom HaShoah. So today is a sad day, and I think part of our responsibility to transmit to the next generation Judaism is to transmit the totality of the Jewish historical experience. Thank God, Baruch Hashem, it's not just sad days. Thank God, Baruch Hashem, it's a lot of Yom Tovim, a lot of Simcha, a lot of joy, and that's what we have to transmit. But together with that comes also this aspect of our experience. Wish all of you a wonderful day and continued Hatzlacha.